Welcome to episode 192 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. In this week's show, I'm picking up on something I briefly mentioned at the end of last week's episode, specifically that I'm about to begin a self-driven photography project. My take on this is quite specific, from the camera I'll be using, to the things I'll be photographing, and the way I'll be handling the pictures. So, let's find out more, shall we? Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 192. Okay, so last week I had a very, very hectic time of it with deadlines. Regular listeners will know that I had six written features to complete and submit. I also had a bunch of editing from a recent shoot and all manner of other bits and pieces. So today, that is basically done. The articles are submitted and done. The photography job is basically edited and done. Just a couple of bits to finalise with the sort of sending things off to people and what have you. But this is the first time for for weeks, I think, that I've actually thought to myself, do you know what? I can actually slow down. Well, not slow down, but I can stop and breathe for a second and think about some of the other stuff that I want to be doing to do with my own photography, aside from the commissioned stuff, thinking about content that I want to share with the Active Photographer audience. And just other things, like I've always got lots of ideas for pictures, photo shoots, feature articles, all that sort of thing. But it is something that I mentioned, I think fairly briefly, I think towards the end of last week's show, which is it's going to be the centre of this week's show. And it concerns the idea of photo projects. Now, you will have heard me mention photography projects, self-driven projects, the importance of taking pictures for yourself as opposed to work that is commissioned. And I think this is a good time to talk about it because we are basically 1 month away from Christmas. Scary. But once Christmas is out the way, and then you get that bit of time in between Christmas and New Year, before you know it, it's a brand new year. And of course, brand new years are notorious for people thinking, I'm going to make this resolution to do this, that, and the other. I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to stop doing that. One of the big ones is people with their health and fitness. I'm going to get really fit. I'm going to get in the best shape of my life. I'm going to bulk up. I'm going to lose lots of weight, all this sort of thing. The same thing happens with photography, and I'm as guilty as the next man when it comes to making myself promises and what have you. Now, one of the things that I used to do, and I haven't done it for a few years, maybe I ought to this year, I always, in the last 2 or 3 weeks of the year, I would always write a post to go on the website, which was talking about how the year's been, what I've enjoyed, what I've found most challenging, and all this sort of thing. But I would also say, rather than being promising myself to do this, that, and the other, and I'm definitely going to do this, I would say, in the post, I'd say, this is what I would like to do a bit more of, or develop, or this is kind of the market, the audience I'm really kind of looking to target more in the coming year. And so every year, it got to sort of the latter part of December, and I'd look back and I'd think, oh, I achieved that. That was really good. Oh, I didn't quite manage that. Okay, so maybe I could think about how I can make that happen for the next year. And that in itself is a really good, if I was to give you a tip, that's a really good thing to do. Even if on a scrap of paper with a pencil, you just write down 3 things that you aim to do in the year ahead. So thinking about photography, thinking about projects, one of the things that people often do is to set themselves a 365 project, which is a great idea. 365, basically, regardless of your camera or your ability to take pictures, anything like that, is the idea is that every day, 365 days of the year, you will take a picture. If you were just sat down having a coffee, you thought, it's the last thing at night, you thought, oh, I didn't take my picture today. You could just take a picture of your coffee, but at least you had made that picture. Now, if you can be creative with it, all the better. The likes of Instagram, of course, allow us to be more creative just because we can apply so many different filters and effects and, if you want to, text or this sort of thing. I have never set myself, this is a terrible admission, I have never set myself a 365 project. Now, reasons or excuses, what shall I call it? I'm going to say reasons. The reasons for this are usually because I find it quite difficult to shoot images that are just for myself. In the past, especially with a lot of the sort of work that I was doing and rushing around so much, and there wasn't all the kind of the Instagram and all that sort of thing. And, you know, when it was just taking pictures on a point and shoot or your SLR, it was just it wasn't so immediate. It's like you could take a picture on your point and shoot, even with a digital, but you then have to upload it to your computer, do something with it. And then if it was maybe Facebook or something like that was coming through, you could upload. And it was a much more long-winded process. Now it's so easy, as we all know, just to share those pictures. But I never really got round to doing a 365 project. I was involved in various projects and things like pinhole camera projects, you might remember. I have, throughout the years, I've arranged shoots just for myself, pictures that I've wanted to make. But I've never actually thought, right, here is a project I'm going to do and I'm going to explore it, I'm going to follow it through and what have you. Well, this year coming, I am hoping to change that. I'm not setting myself a 365 project. I'm being realistic with all manner of factors to do with business, to do with family life, to do with this, that, and the other. There's lots involved. But what I am telling myself is that I'm going to work on a project, because there are a number of things through this year. And this isn't my summing up of the year, by the way. there have been a number of things this year that I've been thinking, you know, I really want to do that. And I've just, for one reason or another, I've just not managed to make it happen. So let me give you a few of those details, or a couple of bullet points. One, I want to shoot on film cameras again. Two, those film cameras should be, a bit more interesting than, say, a camera that is all fully functioning. It's kind of a modern day. If you were to look at a modern day film camera, is there such a thing? Well, of course there is. But if you were to look at something like a Lomography, which is these, you know, sort of plastic lens type cameras, those are being mass produced now in the modern day. So if you were to go somewhere like, I think the last time that I was at the Photographer's Gallery in London, and I'll put a link in the show notes, in their shop there, they had a whole sort of number of shelves packed full of modern day crappy cameras, technical term. You know, the original Lomo cameras and this sort of thing, I've got some of them. They are notoriously bad, the quality of the pictures. But of course, this is what we have come to like so much about them. And this is why so many of the effects on Instagram, some of the filters are basically replicating the rubbish results, the lack of sharpness, the lack of contrast, the light leaks, all this sort of thing, is replicating what we used to get from the proper old ones, which were genuinely terrible, cheap cameras. Now, I've got a bunch of cameras sat in a box. They're not really worth anything, but they're fun to play with. And I've been looking at them, and I'm thinking, right, I want to start using these. Which do I use? And I've put the odd roll or two through them. And there are some which I've got earmarked for playing with, and others which I'm just think, well, I'm not going to get rid of it, because the moment I do, I'm going to wish I had it still. And there was one particular camera I had it and wasn't using it. I thought, you know what? It's no point sitting there, sell it. It's this lovely little Italian thing. And I really wish I hadn't sold it. Anyway, don't dwell on it. Move on. So here is where I'm at. I want to shoot on these cameras, slightly older cameras, not modern day replicas. And to begin with, at least, I am going to shoot the film, have it processed, and then I will scan the negatives and I will put them through Photoshop just to make sure there are no dust marks. Of course, digital cameras, we get dust spots in the pictures. Certainly, or especially if you're shooting at smaller apertures like f16, 22, 32, it really does show them up. But of course, in the good old days, you would actually get dust spots on your negatives, which would often be there because of at the time when you were drying the negatives in a drying cabinet. With the greatest will in the world, you couldn't always keep all the dust out, so you get the odd specks. And then when you printed them up, you'd have to spot them out and what have you. And this is what I alluded to, I think, at the end of last week's show. I want to make this a video series, okay? And I'm only just repeating this for the benefit of those who maybe didn't listen last week or can't quite remember what I said. I want to document my process, or this journey, if you want to give it a more glamorous name, using the Active Photographer YouTube channel. And it's not going to be sort of, you know, 20-minute videos. There's no time for that. It's got to be, you know, maybe 3-4 minutes at a time. If it's something a bit more, it might go a bit longer. But I'm, you know, really want to keep it nice and short, sort of point-and-shoot camera approach, if that requires it. If there's something where, you know, I need it to be a little bit more finessed, shall we say, I might shoot on my DSLR. But as I mentioned last week, I'm actually in the market for getting a new point and shoot camera, because I find with my approach, and with, as you know, with the Active Photographer, the nature of the behind the scenes stuff that fits in, I find much better than every time setting up a you know, big DSLR and shooting big video files and all the rest of it. So what I have in front of me here, and it's mounted at the moment on a little tabletop tripod, just going to remove that. I have got a 50-year-old camera, and this was just something which came from a charity shop. And if you're wondering, where do I get these sort of cameras? Oh, bear with me. There's something at the door I'm expecting. Apologies for that. Just to explain, one of the things that I am in the process of just finishing off at the moment is a shoot that I did where, unusually, the client wants some 10x8-inch prints. And one of the things they want with those prints is to have presentation folders. So I have got, I'm just going to check this very quickly. I have got here, a couple of packs of, because there weren't many to do, a couple of packs of Kenro photo folders. And just double check. nice black ones with the silver edging, a little bit twee. It's not my style at all. I really don't do a lot of this sort of stuff now. But Kenro is the company that I always use. I'll put a link in the show notes. So anyway, there we go. So just another thing for my day. Once I've finished recording this, I'm going to put the prints in those mounts, send those off, because it's all basically ready to go. I've got to send a disc of images as well. So looks like I'm going to the post office this afternoon. I've been waiting for that. Anyway, let me put that to one side. And let's get back to talking about this project. A quick sip of my drink. Okay. So I think I was saying that the camera that I have decided to use is a 50-year-old camera. It's a rangefinder, which, for those of you that don't know, a rangefinder camera is one where you don't actually focus the lens and see the picture come into focus like you would do with an SLR. You have a rangefinder window. You look through that, and you have a sort of like a framing, like the frame of... Well, exactly that, the picture frame. And you have a way of focusing the lens. On this particular one, and I'll explain what it is in a moment, I have a little sort of sliding lever, and that brings a little window, like a yellow, sort of, or a very faint yellow window, across the view. And the idea is you match up two images through the viewfinder, and once they both align, or two images of the view, once they align, you know that your camera has focused. And this thing, like I say, it was this one dates from they were made originally, they started making this model in 1965. This one, I think, is somewhere between 69 and 71. The model here is made by Canon, and it is a Canonet QL19. And if I can find a decent link, I will put a link in the show notes. The project that I am going to do is... Bearing in mind that we're still talking about the outdoors and lifestyle and all this sort of thing, I want to start experimenting with this camera with a view to ultimately taking some really nice solid pictures when I'm in the outdoors using this camera. And ultimately, I want to shoot black and white, and I want to at least develop my film myself, which I do have experience of. I just haven't done it for a long time. I don't have a darkroom, a traditional darkroom at the moment. I could turn a room into it. They're all, people often use things like bathrooms, cupboards, all that sort of thing. But I don't have a darkroom at the moment. But to begin with, I'm not at that point just yet. This camera here, if I look at the lens, it's lovely and clean. There is no fungus. There is no degrading on the lens that I can see. And often with older lenses, you get fungus growing inside on the glass, and it just reduces the image quality. This is a... now, what's this? It's a 45mm f1.9. lens, and so it's a really bright, fast lens. Really, the ISO range on it goes from a quarter of a second in increments all the way up to a 500th of a second. You can only go up to the equivalent of about ISO ISO 800, I believe. Can I have a look here? Yeah, ISO 800. These levers are a little bit stiff in places. Yeah, ISO 800. So it's not the sort of, it's not what we're used to now. It goes down to ISO, 25. So, if I could find some really fine grain film, that'd be brilliant. I always used to shoot on an Agfa film called Agfa APX film, and it was beautiful. I used to use the ISO 25 or 100. I'd process it in some chemicals called agfa-rodinol or rodinol. For those of you that have darkroom experience, you'll probably be familiar with that. Anyway, to begin with, first things first, I don't know if this camera is going to work. I don't know if there's, from what I can tell, that's the sound of me cocking the shutter and then the release. Now you can tell already, I'm holding this right up to the microphone. You can tell if I take it maybe, I don't know, about 3 feet away. It's actually a really quiet camera to use. And that's the beauty of rangefinders. They're often nice and quiet. But I need to just check to make sure that it functions as it should. Now, from what I can tell, the shutter is working absolutely fine. The aperture, the blades, everything's working as it should. It goes up to f/16 on here. It's got a hot shoe on the top. It also has a flash sync cable in the side. A little bit of a dent where someone has previously dropped it, but I'm not too worried about that. There's a film counter on there, of course, so that you can check how many shots you've taken or what's left. At the bottom, there's obviously the tripod mount, but there's a little door there where you put a battery in there. That's for the light meter. If the light meter didn't work, that's not a problem, because I have a handheld Siconic L358, I think it is. I'll put a link in the show notes. Handheld light meter, which is brilliant. So I can take my light readings and then manually set everything into this camera. So for example, I could think, okay, I want to shoot at f5.6 for this portrait, and this light, I'll put it in ISO 400, say, f5.6, it's giving me 125th of a second. So I could just put it all in manually. A little bit more long-winded, but once you get used to it, it can actually be pretty quick. So that's that. The biggest thing, which is going to be one of my first things, I'm just going to open the back of the camera. Now, with these cameras, of course, they are film cameras. And I think I mentioned this last week, in that you have to have a bit of light sealing around the door area so that the film doesn't get what we call fogged, which is when light comes in the back of the camera. That's when you get all that kind of, if you're shooting on color film, sort of yellowy, orangey, purpley, kind of, you know, a messy kind of color. Can be quite nice, can be quite arty. But what I'm going to do, my first step is to shoot a roll of color film, and I will probably, just for the sake of testing, I'll probably go out on a nice bright day. It's really miserable today, but I'll go out with probably an ISO 200 film and just experiment, making sure that the focusing works properly. I could set the camera up on a tripod and be very scientific about it, and so I know that everything is exactly how it should be. But bear in mind, that's not how I'm going to be using it. I'm going to be using it much more on the fly, or it might be a set portrait shot, but it probably won't be tripod mounted. It'll be more sort of flexibility. One of the things that this camera does have is, I believe it has shutter priority. Now, if you've listened to me and followed my activities long enough, you'll know that my preference is to shoot in aperture priority. So I can control the depth of field. I think to myself, right, I'm photographing, say, this portrait of this person. They're in, I know, the street or in the woodland. It's a little bit busy behind them, so I'm going to use, say, f5.6, focus on their eyes, and the background will be nicely out of focus to whatever degree given that situation. And then as long as I'm happy that I've got a fast enough shutter speed so that I don't get camera movement, camera shake, that's my approach. And of course, just as a very quick thing, those of you who don't know, really good little tip, and I've shared this many, many times. Whatever the focal length of your lens is on whatever camera you're shooting, so this is a 45mm lens, the lowest shutter speed that you want to use as a guide, and these guides are made to be flexible and rules are there to be broken, whatever whatever the focal length is of the lens, that number should be your minimum shutter speed. So this one is a 45mm lens. So I have, there isn't a 45th of a second. There is a 30th of a second and a 60th of a second. So to err on the side of caution, I would say to myself, right, the minimum handholdable shutter speed is a 60th of a second. Now I know how, you know, I know what my nerves are like, what, you know, I don't have the shakes or anything. If I'm careful, I can go lower than that. I could probably go down to a 30th or a 15th of a second, no problem. Other people might not be able to. You can brace the camera up at that point against a wall or what have you. But that's a good rule of thumb. But see, my approach to photography, I like the aperture priority. That's how I've pretty much always, that's my starting point for taking pictures. So shutter priority is the other way around. You say, and it's not backwards exactly, say I was photographing someone running through a field, I think, right, I don't want lots of movement, I want to freeze the movement. So I would, using the light meter to make sure that everything is within the range that it allows, the combination between shutter speed and aperture, I might say, right, I want at least a 250th of a second. Or let's use the example that I had before. Say I thought, okay, 125th of a second is exactly what I want. So I can do that. Now, depending on the lighting, at that same ISO, whatever I said, 200, 400, whatever, doesn't really matter, it might be that the camera decides that, okay, if you want to use 125th of a second, I can give you F11, because the bigger the number, the smaller the hole. Okay, so there's less light coming in, if that makes sense. It's a bit backwards, but for whatever, you know, one reason or one way or another, it might just say that, do you know what, That may not be the best example actually, but if in a given situation it gave me F11, that's fine because it's given me that 125th of a second. However, because of the depth of field at F11, it might be that all the background is much more in focus and it's much more distracting. So that's why I prefer aperture priority, because I decide what it's going to be, you know, the amount of sharpness, what's going to be out of focus in front of and behind the subject. And then I worry about the shutter speed. Then I think about, okay, can I handhold it? Do I need a tripod or a monopod? Or do I need to brace the camera against a wall or anything like that? So that's kind of the technical side of it. That's the camera that I'm going to start with. It could be that what I do is record my first very short video saying, okay, here's my new project, something a bit of fun. Here's the camera I'm going to be using. This is my setup, first of all. And I think I'm going to try to do some behind the scenes as well, bit of like handheld filming whilst I'm out and about. But it might be that I take the pictures and it lets light in. So, okay, that'll be the next step. It might be that it doesn't let light in which case that saves me a job, because if it does, what I have to do is either decide, do I let the light come in and be a bit arty, which can be great or not great, or do I put some fresh light-proofing strips around the door compartment? And that's actually not a problem. You just have to scrape out the old one, which has got a little bit, it's broken down. That's the issue here. It's as old in old cameras, that's what they do. The foam sort of breaks down. But then if that is the case, I will document that process. Now, just to just to finish off a little bit, what I want to talk about is the actual why I'm using this camera. Now, I've already said that I've got various cameras, which, yeah, some of them date back to the early 1900s. And, you know, they're great for that. I've got one camera which is, again, it's not really worth anything. They were mass-produced by Kodak, and it was called a Kodak Vest Pocket Autograph. And it was a camera which was very popular with soldiers in the war. It has like a bellows system that you pull out and what have you. The autograph bit actually is interesting. I believe it comes from the fact that you've got a little window on the back with a door, and you with a hinge. So you pull that back, and there's like a red anti-fogging sort of filter there, so that the light doesn't, a bit like in a dark room, you know, if you're in a dark room, you always work under red light conditions, so that your printing paper doesn't get fogged by daylight or white light. So it's the same thing with this, but what it allows you to do, it's got a little stylus, just like you'd get with, you remember a number of years ago where styluses, is that the word, were popular with smartphones, so you could physically write or draw or sketch on your iPhone. You can still get things like that, but this is a metal thing which allows you to literally engrave into this little panel, which in turn transfers the pressure of you pushing down and writing, what have you, onto the negative of the film in the camera. And so we always talk about, oh, isn't Photoshop wonderful? And, you know, post-production, you can put text on there. And also, these guys were already doing that. If you see these pictures that have got, you know, handwriting on the pictures, that's how you're seeing those results. It's quite interesting, but I'm not going to be using that camera for a while. I just want something that is maybe a bit more reliable, hopefully. And say, this could all be a load of I could be completely proven wrong here. It could all just go terribly. But if that's the case, I'm going to do these first tests, and then if I'm happy with, you know, thinking that I can progress, then I will release that video and it will become the series as I progress through it. If it's just absolute, if I find that it's a complete lemon and the shutter doesn't actually work properly, even though it sounds like it's okay and what have you, then I'll just knock it on the head and move on to something else. And you might well hear me talk about that. But the sort of pictures I want to take, and I'll just round off with this. Of course, I'm thinking about the outdoors and lifestyle and what have you. But rangefinder cameras have been for a long, long time extremely popular. Back when rangefinders were the cameras that were around, like the most popular, the likes of Henri Cartier-Bresson was using Leicas, which of course are rangefinder cameras. You've got people like Robert Duano, and who else can I give? I don't know if Eugene Atget used rangefinders or if he was on plate cameras, but I'll link to all these people. You can find out for yourself. But of course, that was the earlier days, and even before that, the process of documenting life. And I could talk for hours about this stuff, but you know, going right back to the dawn of photography, and then moving along a bit, thinking about glass plate cameras. People were still using those in the streets on a wooden tripod to document activity. But with the advent of rangefinder cameras, the likes of Cartier-Bresson really were able to work quickly, quietly, unobtrusively. Cartier-Bresson actually was well known for he'd be walking down the street, always looking around him, seeing what was going on. He would be aware of a scene. He was waiting for people to react. He was waiting to react on chance happenings. And he would have his camera set up in such a way that he didn't have to worry about trying to bring everything into focus, you know, lining everything up. He knew that he had enough depth of field that it would be sharp from here to here. And he would be walking along and he would see the shot and he would pivot onto his tiptoes on one foot, raise the camera to his eye, take the shot, step down and carry on walking. No one was aware he'd taken the shot. It was just such a wonderful way to do it. Very seamless, very, you know, other times he'd stop still and line things up and what have you. But I've got here, I've got all these books which I love to reference. And as I've said many times before, I get so much more out of classic photography, what we often refer to as the masters of photography, rather than the modern day stuff. Some very good modern day stuff, don't get me wrong, but there we go. But this is a book called A Propos de Paris, which is it's a wonderful collection of pictures taken in and around Paris and what have you. Shots of crowds, shots of tree-lined sidewalks, kids playing in the street, all this sort of thing, you know. And one of the shots that's in here is a very famous shot of a man jumping over a puddle. In fact, if you follow a link to, I'll put a link probably to Wikipedia, I would hazard a guess, I'll do a quick check actually. Let's have a look here. Okay, if I look at Wikipedia, it's got a picture of Cartier-Bresson himself. You know, I'm surprised it actually doesn't have this. If you type in something like Cartier-Bresson man jumping over puddle or something, very iconic picture. It's what, you know, he coined the phrase the decisive moment, when everything comes together, that moment you take the picture and everything just falls into place. That's a very well-known picture that illustrates that. But, you know, I've got that as a reference. I've got a modern-day book, which I've mentioned in the past, called Street Photography Now by Sophie Howarth and Stephen McLaren. It's a Thames and Hudson book. Again, I'll link in the show notes to this. But again, it's just modern-day observational photography. Some really nice, strong black and white stuff in there. Some modern-day sort of colour. You know, just the art of seeing and composing these shots, which just tell a story. And then one other book, and this is where I get my inspiration. I've got a book here that's photographs by a guy called John Nicholson, and it's called Cowboys: A Vanishing World. And it's, you know, there's a lot of color stuff in there, but there's also a lot of black and white photography. And I don't know what cameras he has shot on for this, but the sort of pictures that I see in there are the sort of pictures that I want to I've got in the back of my mind. The just the aesthetics of it, the tonal range, all this sort of thing. Doesn't have to be absolutely perfect, pin sharp always, but you know, it's books like that which are great reference points. And I would say always have a look in charity shops. I've got lots of photography books over the years from charity shops, which are in fact, I'll get one more and then I will finish up. Here we go. So this is a book fairly recently. It's called Master Photographers: The World's Great Photographers on Their Art and Technique. And I mean, you know, if you wanted to have first-hand accounts and a bit of biography about some of the best photographers in the world, you've got Ansel Adams, Eve Arnold, David Bailey, Bill Brandt, Robert Duano, as I mentioned before, Elliot Erwitt, who is famous for shooting a series called Dog Dogs, I believe. He did a book about that. Helmut Newton, Andre Curtis, all these guys. There's so many, you know, books like this. There's so much good stuff in here. Certainly for listeners who are in the UK here, you will especially, I would imagine, be aware of a picture of Winston Churchill, who, you know, is such an iconic man in history. But there's a photograph, portrait, taken by Yusuf Kosh. And it's such a, you know, oh, it's such a strong portrait and so well known. But I get so much, you can probably tell I'm quite excited by this. I get so much out of this because it's all about light and observation. And, you know, they didn't have 24.3 megapixels. They didn't have pocket wizards. They didn't have carbon fiber tripods and all this sort of stuff. It was all about the craft. And so just to bring this full circle, my project that I want to play around with is looking at these stripped down film cameras, thinking how I can get more creative with them. I'm not going to do loads of post-production because that, I think, would take away from, you know, the beauty of what they can do and what have you. But there we go. So hopefully that has given you some ideas. It's maybe given you a little bit of a kick. And if you're thinking, oh, yeah, I've thought about doing a 365, or I'd like to shoot some more stuff for myself, have a think about what you want to photograph. Do you just want to use your iPhone? Nothing wrong with that. You know, Instagram, you could use Instagram as your online project book, if you like. You know, you could upload all the behind the scenes shots to share. Here is my camera. Here's me taking this picture. Here is this picture that I shot on this iPhone. And this is this, that, and the other. Have fun with it. Photography is fun. It should be fun. But hopefully, like I say, that's given you a bit of inspiration, maybe. And is there anything else? Yeah, you've just got to keep yourself interested. Now, just one final thing. I have listeners from all around the world and from all sorts of backgrounds. I have people that are ecologists, people that are artists, people that are truck drivers, people that are, you know, people that sort of watch over they sit in bird hides most of the week, watching over birds of prey just to make sure they're okay, all this sort of thing. You can make your project from your immediate surroundings in your day-to-day life. You might be a family person and want to document your child growing up. Do a picture every day, seriously. You know, time is precious. You should. Anyway, there we go. I hope that's been of use, but for now I will leave it there. For a quick visual reference to the camera I'll be using, a Canon Canonet QL19, you can take a look at the picture which accompanies this episode. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or, of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.